Hello and welcome to the Swine Disease Reporting System. This is the SDRS report number 74, where we're going to cover the findings from the previous month, the month of March. My name is Edison Magalhães here at the SDRS.
Hello, my name is Giovanni Travis at SDRS.
Hello, my name is Guilherme, also at SDRS.
Hello, Daniel Linhares with the SDRS.
And today, as I mentioned, we're going to cover the findings from the previous month for the SDRS, the month of March. And we also have the pleasure to have here today Dr. Peter Schneider joining the SDRS podcast. Dr. Schneider received his DVM from Iowa State University in 2012. And since then, he's been employed by Innovative Agriculture Solutions, where he works with several pork producers across the country. And Dr. Schneider also engaging with his family farm in Northeast Iowa, raising pigs, corns, and beans. He will share his experience interpreting the SDRS monthly findings and also insights regarding swine health challenges in a highly dense areas. Dr. Schneider, it's a pleasure for us to have you here. Welcome to the SDRS podcast.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk with you guys. It's not always fun to talk about disease, but it is always fun to talk about pigs. So
we're very glad to have you here, Dr. Schneider. And before we enter our discussions and pick up your brain, Glenn, please give us an update of what is the main SDRS highlights for the month of March.
Yeah, Giovanni, let's start with PERS as always. That remains a similar positivity when we compare with the month of February. So sow farms remain kind of in a 22% of positivity rate in the PCR cases. Mm-hmm. And winter market remains high as 37% of the cases being positive for PERS. And at the regional level, when you look at that, Indiana and Iowa, they are having like cases above the expected of the positivity for this month of the year.
And what the advisory group told us about that?
Yeah, in some of these states like Indiana, the advisor said that this change is basically more the change of strategy that they are having in terms of testing for PERS there. So testing more these finishing sites, and that's why it's increasing the number of positive cases. But in other states, some other lineage of the PERS are affecting these states, like the L1Cs that are causing more clinical cases there, and that's why we are having more positive cases as well.
Last month, we were watching closely the enteric coronavirus. What do we have for this month?
Yeah, that's the good news of this month, that the enteric coronavirus positivity rates are decreasing this month, mainly the win-to-finish sites. So either PED and also Delta coronavirus, we are having this decrease. But however, when we look again at the state-level monitoring, PED is above the expected in Kansas, for example, and Delta coronavirus is above the expected in Minnesota and Missouri.
So some regional activity going on there.
Correct.
And how about the other pathogens like influenza?
Yeah, we have some news from the SDRS dashboard. If you go to the SDRS dashboard online in fielddepth.org, you now have the opportunity to take a look at the influenza state-level monitoring that we developed and is now available, publicly available and free. So you can take a look if your state is above or below the expected in terms of influenza positivity. Mm-hmm. And for example, this month, either all of the baselines are within expected, but influenza in itself, when you look to overall level, in the winter market category is with 42% of positivity rate, really high for this period of the year, even though we are getting close to the spring, right? So usually we have more positive cases for influenza in this period of the year. But when we look to our forecast model, it's above the expected in a week, basically.
Any updates on the tissue diagnosis?
Yes, and just to emphasize this information that influenza is having a lot of positive cases in the win-to-finish sites, we are also receiving a lot of tissue cases in the confirmed tissue diagnosis here at Iowa State University with positive cases for influenza when the diagnosticians are analyzing these tissues.
All right, thanks Giovanni and Guilherme for the updates on what happened last month for the SDIS related information. And now let's move to our discussion with Dr. Schneider. And Dr. Schneider, particularly in Iowa region where you work with more farms, you face a production system with a high density surrounded by farms. Can you explain to us the health challenge and how you avoid these challenges?
Yeah, definitely. In here over the last month or two, it feels like our wean to finish cases of PERS are definitely increasing. Our sow farm breaks mostly happened in late fall, early winter, so the November, December timeframe. And I think that partially feeds a little bit into our wean to finish higher positivity rate in terms of these sow farms are starting to put out more pigs now that they're getting through the initial break stage, but these pigs are all still PERS positive. different levels of shedding and different levels of when we really see that clinical disease come through. But regardless, we're still putting more PRRS positive pigs out there, and certainly it's increasing our risk to spread that around laterally to different groups and increasing our level of positivity in those wean to finish cases. So I think what we really work with at this time of year is just generating reminders for service staff, caretakers, and other, folks that are getting through our barns and providing services for us by sending out either email messages or one-page reminders, just to continue to keep up the level of biosecurity that we need to keep these groups negative. We go into that fall and winter time frame, and we kind of have that high anxiety of, oh man, we're back into the season of disease here. And I think our level of biosecurity really ratchets up a notch at that point in time as the initial breaks seem to start. But I think there's a level of fatigue that happens as we get to January, February, after we've been in kind of high gear for biosecurity for a while. And I think that's also probably contributes to some of our higher rates of positivity that we're seeing at this point in time. So, in terms of the coronaviruses, we are seeing maybe a bit higher level of PED, and especially wean to finish cases or late finishing, and a little bit expected this time of year with just the seasonality of it. But we always think about transportation events and those breaks, and a lot of times they're surrounding that transportation event, whether it be a dirty truck or whether it be loadout crews or for whatever reason, it seems like that's kind of our higher prevalence time frame. And so again, we're just always trying to think about the biosecurity around that. And the biggest thing is we're always trying to maximize our yardage, and making sure that we're getting as many pigs through those barns as possible. So a lot of times our gaps in between when we're loading pigs out and when we're loading in new groups is pretty tight. And so for this time of year, when we have a late finisher break or late nursery break of PED, and we have a dirty site, we really need to communicate when those loadouts are going to happen and those barns are going to be empty, so we can line up our wash crews to be there right away to get those barns clean to maximize the amount of downtime we have, as well as giving us an opportunity to go back and review those sites, doing a site inspection and doing some touch-up as needed to make sure we're getting those barns as clean as possible and ready for the next groups coming in. So it just really comes down to a lot of communication on that end and making sure we're doing everything we can.
Just a quick follow-up on that. What's a good downtime, realistically talking about visiting finishing sites in Iowa?
That's a great question. I think, we're probably looking at about 3 days in a lot of cases, three, maybe four. But with these PED late breaks, we just know there's a lot of virus in those environments. And, a lot, our crews do a great job with washing these barns, but unfortunately, even the smallest amount of manure that remains down becomes an issue. So, if we still do have these short periods of downtimes in between, we got to talk about increasing barn temperatures to really get those environments as dry as possible, talking about whitewashing processes, to compare along with our site inspections and rewashes. The problem is a lot of times we don't have an extra power washer on site. So once the barn crews, the clean crews load up and go away, we're kind of stuck without an opportunity to really get those barns clean. So, talking about the opportunity for the site owners or caretakers to have a small portable power washer to just make those final touch-ups or communicating with the crews when they're getting done so we can get those done before they're all wrapped up and out of there. So.
Yep, that's a good point. And when you think about this disease transmission across farms, that can get even worse in high density areas like the Midwest regions. So sometimes there is discussion about, well, maybe some health practices or management practices that we do may be contributing to increase or decrease that effect of this disease. So when you think about the swine production today and in this high density area and based on your experience, could you elaborate a little bit more about how can we use the decision making regarding this endemic disease for high density area and try to reduce the clinical impact of this disease?
Yeah, certainly. And Giovanni, I want to thank you for the work you've done on looking at some of the diversity within our PRRS viruses that we're seeing out there today. I think it's really helpful for us to understand those, the diversity. And again, it's kind of alarming sometimes to look at the change in the amount of diversity we're seeing in these viruses here over time. And it doesn't just stop to seem to get any better. So we know that, PRRS is great at replicating and making those errors. And so we really want to put those best practices in place to help limit that diversity and genetic change in PRRS especially. So it goes back to biosecurity and, you know, what do we do to limit the overall number of pigs that get infected? Because if they don't get infected, obviously we really can't get replication errors and we can't get recombination events from happening. So, you know, in places where I work, Northwest Iowa, Central Iowa, other parts, you know, we just have a lot of pigs. And we know there's a lot of pigs that are coming into those parts of the world that are PRRS positive already. And mm-hmm. so we have to look at how we do the best in keeping that the crossover of virus between sites. So communicating our you know, practical biosecurity standards with caretakers, service staff, and service providers for those sites to make sure they're following those. And then again, doing some audits and verifying that, yes, in fact, the biosecurity practices we put in place are being followed and are being executed well. So again, having service staff go out and out of those processes, or myself go out and out of those processes, is a pretty important strategy for me and how we look at things. We also have to talk about how we strategically place these pigs. I, you know, kind of advocate, hey, you know, let's not put pigs with a really high virus level into dense areas. It's all it's going to do is just create more challenges for ourselves because of the amount of pigs that are positive. You know, again, if we have a high risk for spreading it with a high level of positivity between groups, we're going to create an increase of recombination events and create more of that diversity. So it kind of comes down to communication and can we communicate with our neighbors of what their status is? Can we isolate PRRS positive pigs that to areas with low density or in pods where, again, they're all going to be of the same PRRS strain to, again, hopefully limit some of that diversity that can generate from, again, the replication and recombination events.
Yeah, what else? I mean, a follow-up would be, what can we do to completely break the cycle of transmission year after year, right? To talk a little bit about pig flow, biosecurity, but, you know, based on what you visit a lot of places here, right? A lot of different regions, and what can we learn overall, and what can the industry do as a whole to definitely break the cycle going forward, right?
Well, I think we've seen some good, I guess, changes, and a little bit of it's been forced by market dynamics too here, but we've really focused on moving our sow farms and sow production to maybe more pig sparse areas than what we have in the past. And this gives us a greater opportunity to keep these pigs and these sow farms negative, and weaning more negative pigs is certainly great for the industry in sense of a lower level of PRRS positivity out there. And to again keep more pigs clean and reduce probably the rate of some of this diversity that's going to be generated in our PRRS strains. You know, the economics really support moving these pigs to negative areas as well, or the sow farms to negative areas. We can certainly pay more for feed and for trucking as long as we're continuously producing PRRS negative pigs. So I think it's kind of kills two birds with one stone there to some extent. You know, and again, I think the SDRS dashboard has been really great in showing that maybe some of these changes have already started to occur. If we look at the 9 years preceding 2022, you know, we saw kind of a continuous level of our positivity on samples submitted at Iowa State. And over the last 2 years, that level seems to kind of be coming down some. So again, as more folks have focused on moving sows into those pig sparse areas and hopefully keeping them negative, I think that we're definitely seeing some benefit now. Again, 2 years, does that make a trend? You know, maybe not really, but it's certainly an interesting a point to know. And again, we'll hopefully continue to see that level coming down. I also think we've got, you know, a lot more tools than we ever have in the past, right? I think every time we always talk, we can say that because we're continuing to have more advances in the understanding of PRRS and whatnot. But things like clamp sequencing as well as whole genome sequencing, it just provides us with a whole world of information that we didn't have even a few years ago. And so it allows us to probably track progression in our PRRS closures better. It also allows us to communicate more in terms with other folks that have gone through some similar viruses to ask, how did this fare for you? And it helps us make decisions maybe on the front end of these, whether, again, a depopulation or repopulation is maybe a better idea to go through, or it gives us some ideas about what to expect in our progression in these closures and realistic time frames. And so we can help manage maybe our wean to finish population better with where we're placing these pigs at.
And you mentioned this a couple of times, right? The whole genome sequencing and the evidence of recombination and the grow finish site being almost like an amplifier spot, right, for new viruses to meet and recombine and emerge and kind of emerge more and more virulent strains over time. So what else can we do, right, to kind of make it hard for different wild types to meet and recombine, and therefore reducing the overall diversity, but also reducing the chances of emerging new strains?
Yeah, no, and certainly that's a great question. You know, again, we've talked about before, more negative pigs are helpful, again, increasing our biosecurity. And I do also get concerned a little bit about, the widespread use of modified live vaccines, and maybe that's a bit controversial or a loaded thing to bring up. But, again, anytime we're recombining or allowing two different viruses, even if it's a modified live vaccine virus, to combine with wild types, it always gives me, again, a bit of a pause. And certainly Giovanni's had some research out there that's shown, that those are capable of creating some different strains as well. So, again, we have to weigh the benefits and negatives of those things. And certainly, again, we want to do everything we can to keep as many pigs alive as possible and reduce the severity of some of these viruses. But I think we need to start asking some more questions about how we're managing disease and what we're doing to try to reduce the diversity in this thing, because it doesn't seem like these viruses are getting any easier to manage. And the prevalence of these the duration of these continues to astound me a little bit in how long it takes us to get some of these viruses eliminated.
And additionally to the modified live vaccines that you mentioned, there is other approach like, well, wild type strains can also recombine. So there are things like, if you have flows that there is different wild type strains, try to avoid commingling those if possible. Is one of the alternative ways to reduce this opportunity for recombination. Do not injecting pigs with a different live virus inoculum than the one that you are having in the farm is another opportunity also to try to avoid this type of exposure and the opportunity to create a recombination. Because the only thing that you need for recombination to have the opportunity to occur is two viruses replicating at the same time in the same cell. That's doesn't matter if it's wild type or modified life. If you create those opportunities, you can be creating also opportunity for a combination.
And Giovanni, so if you have a two wild the recombinant product of two wild types clinically, that's going to be more impactful than a wild type in a vaccine virus, right? A modified live virus.
Yeah, that's what we have been seeing. If you look for the last few years, there was the emergence of this lineage 1C.5 that was called RFLP-1.4 variant at that time. And we have identified that it was a recombining strain. The University of Minnesota published a full paper on that. So it was a wild-type recombined strain across different strains that was very, very aggressive in the United States. Mm-hmm. If you look for our friends in Europe that had the PRRS virus type 1, there was a new strain that emerged that is called the Rosalia. And that's a recombined between wild type strains. So it also is very aggressive in the field for the ones that are affected. Mm-hmm. What the data has been showing is that the recombination between wild type strains has been making very aggressive strains. And the recombination between wild type and modified live vaccine has been intermediate clinical signs between the wild type strains and the low effect of a modified life. So it's neither one or the other, but it still have a clinical implication that it occurs in the field.
Anyways, the goal should be to reduce that diversity, right? Dr. Schneider was talking about.
Yep.
Do whatever you can to reduce the pressure of infection and the viral diversity in general.
Dr. Schneider was going to say something.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And, I think about this back when probably I first started getting into practice, and we had farms where, we were doing LVI processes to acclimate gilts. And some of these farms, we were actually using two viruses to do that process. And so you think back about, hey, that was a fairly risky event and probably did generate, again, an additional diversity. And you know, now if we do have farms that use LVI processes, which we still do, and anytime we have a new introduction, usually the goal is to get both of those viruses rolled out of the farm as quick as possible. And so again, not continuing to do a two virus acclimation process and move to more of a closure and shutdown and or a depop and repop depending on the severity. So I think our mindset have changed a bit in terms of how we try to manage that. Again, like you're saying, especially on the south farm end, when we do those acclimation processes for gilts to reduce that diversity and that risk.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity here, a lot of things are changing for us here, but how do you communicate that, like on a farm level, with the customer or the farmer? And there's now this concept of multiple virus. We are adding the clamp, the NGS, the whole genome sequencing. So when you're going to do exposure, now you just don't have a single material you're going to use. You have to better understand what's in there, and maybe you find two, three viruses, and like Giovanni was mentioning, how you communicate that, like we are learning that over the new years now, and how the farmers are receiving that information.
Yeah, you know, again, it's amazing how much these producers love technology. And so I think, you know, anytime that they can learn something, most of them are you know, extremely excited about that. Wow. So when we start talking about, you know, the different technologies that we have, and it's like, you know, hey guys, yes, it costs a little bit more for whole genome sequencing, but the nice thing is we learn so much more information from it. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're not using that directly in what we're doing, but man, it creates a wealth of knowledge that again, researchers can utilize that, you know, and again, we can compare our viruses over time. And so for the most part, there's never been any pushback in terms of, hey, the cost is, you know, a little bit higher, but I think we have better information to make better decisions. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, the dollars and cents for them is extremely important, and the ability to make better decisions helps them make more money. Mm-hmm. And so again, the buy-in has been great on that end with these processes. I've never really once got a pushback as to, you know, that doesn't seem like that's, you know, an economically feasible activity for us to pursue.
Very it's always not only about the cost. The cost is important, like you said, but the return, right? That's why people invest in better genetics, biosecurity, and monitoring is just part of that. It's a technology that people could use and get some information to do something better and improve productivity, right?
Absolutely. Oh,
very good. Thank you, Dr. Schneider, for your time. I know you're very busy. It was a pleasure for us to have you here today in this podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you guys, and see you guys next month. Bye-bye.